The Forgotten Soldier, Disc 9.
Chapter 66. The encrypted tunnel for our computer hookup made Colonel Kurt Hale's voice sound a little mechanical, but it was doing little to hide his anger. He was pissed, and not in the usual Pike will be Pike way. "Before I cut your nuts off and serve them to the Oversight Council on a platter, I want to be sure. You saw some people you thought were bad, and then interdicted them in the hopes of interrogating an Arab that you had no Omega authority to capture. And the asshole escaped? Did I just summarize that correctly?" "Wow," I thought. When you put it that way, it did sound a little bad. We'd come back from the operation a day ago, and I'd opted to wait for the scheduled contact to report, mainly because we hadn't captured anyone, and none of our team had any injuries. We'd escaped clean, and I was fairly sure that the Arab wasn't filing a police report. For her part, Carly would say nothing, as she was operating outside of the CIA, and so I decided that no flash message was necessary. A report right after wouldn't have altered anything on my end, but it could have altered a vote on Alpha authority from the Oversight Council. Because of that, I'd decided that reporting early wasn't in the team's best interest, or Guy's. All I'd catch was the wrath of Kurt Hale, and I could wait for that. Hell, it wasn't like he was going to tell me anything new. I'd already had a hammering from the teammates at the after-action review. Back in the hotel, we as a team held a clinical, antiseptic inspection of every detail of the mission to learn what went right and what could have gone better, the point being to spread any lessons across the force. As team leader, I made sure that nobody was immune from criticism, me included, but also that nobody was attacked out of anger or animosity. 5 minutes in, I was thinking maybe this one wasn't that necessary, since the only consternation seemed to be me deciding to hit the guys in the park in the first place. Knuckles was on my side, with Jennifer saying it was absolutely counterproductive. Jennifer's points, that we could have evacuated Carly without any drama, and we had no Omega authority for a takedown, were valid. But had it gone the other way, it would be a whole different conversation, which meant that it wasn't worth dwelling on. But for some reason, Jennifer did. Brett backed up Jennifer, and poor Nick sat in the middle, afraid to commit either way. Jennifer really didn't want to talk about the actions themselves, which piqued my interest. I certainly didn't want to detail what had happened to me, but I did, because the team needed to know what they were up against with that Arab. It was embarrassing, but necessary, and I was curious why Jennifer was staying away from her fight, preferring to harp on the overarching decision. She was hiding something. I asked her to walk me through her part of the mission, and she did, which sounded pretty solid. She brought up some points about communication and flow, and it sounded fairly normal, like the takedown hadn't been any issue at all. I asked, "So, how did V-Pier get his face clocked?" Nick's nose had been bloodied, and he had a cut below his eye, meaning something hadn't gone smoothly. Before he could speak, Jennifer defended him, saying, "He did just fine." I looked at Nick, waiting. Embarrassed, he glanced at Jennifer, then said, Okay, I wasn't ready. I lost control of my target, and I almost cost both of us." His hangdog face was almost comical. He looked like he was waiting on me to hand him a plane ticket home, not realizing it was the perfect answer, and that I was pleased. I could tell he'd already internalized the lessons and that the admission was very, very painful. There was nothing like thinking you're the hero only to have to admit you're a zero. Jennifer was glaring at me, daring me to tear into him, like I did it for sport. I realized she was still learning. Still thought these AARs were nothing more than an alpha male dick measuring contest. It could be a teaching point for both of them. I smiled and said, "Well, at least your guy went down. I'm still chasing mine." I saw the relief flood through him, and Knuckles gave me a wink. Jennifer looked a little shocked that I didn't tear him apart, which I'd correct once we were in private, when I could rib her a little bit about her lost puppy protective instincts. It wasn't doing Nick any favors. After the AAR, we'd spent the rest of the time tracking Guy's phone and spitballing various courses of action for bringing him in, waiting on the Oversight Council to give us our big ticket for the attempt, Alpha authority against the Arab contingent. We'd identified his hotel, then followed his phone signature around the city, just keeping tabs. But I never got the call from Kurt. Finally, I'd reached my window of contact with the task force. When I reported in, the commo guy on the other end had said, "Hang on, Pike. Colonel Hale told me to get him when you called." Which wasn't what I wanted to hear, and now I was really not hearing any love. I said, "Sir, okay, maybe it wasn't the best decision. But you want Guy back. The Arab is on his target deck. He was hunting Carly because of her connection to Guy. And it was within my in extremis authority. It was a good call, but it didn't work out." "Didn't work out, really?" The sarcasm was so thick I could have put it on a bagel. I waited, mute. Kurt sighed, then looked at the ceiling. He returned to the screen and said, "So you didn't bother to call in this little escapade because... why?" "Because it was no harm, no foul. It didn't require a flash message." "You mean because it would have affected the council vote on giving you Alpha for the very Arab you attacked?" He wasn't asking a question. I said, "Well, yeah, sir. I knew you'd have to report it." He chuckled at my honesty, shaking his head. "Okay, you'd have been right. No way they would have given Alpha with those shenanigans, especially with Billings on the vote." I perked up. "Are you saying what I think you are? They did?" "Yeah, they did. President Warren weighed in based on my judgment, which in hindsight looks a little suspect." Brett knocked on the door, saying, "Coming in." Kurt heard and said, "Who is it?" I said, "Brett," then turned from the screen. "What's up?" "Guy's on the move again. And it's way north. It's a spike. He's not running around the city anymore. Knuckles thinks he's operational." From the computer, Kurt said, "North where?" I scooted over, letting Brett slide into the screen. "Way north of Athens, like 2 hours away. Near Delphi?" Brett looked startled and said, "Actually, yeah, not near Delphi. He stopped at the Delphi ruins." Kurt became brusque, all business. "Pike, Secretary Billings is meeting the first target on Guy's list, a man named Haider al-Attiya. It's a clandestine link-up to discuss a potential peace deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan, and it's happening at the Delphi ruins. He cannot interrupt that." Holy cow, that's bad. Guy had no idea, I was sure. In his quest for revenge, he was about to aid the very terrorists he hated. I turned to Brett. "Get the team up and moving." He went running out of the room, and I returned to the screen saying, "Sir, they're 2 hours away. I don't know if I can interdict Guy in time." He said, "Do what you can. I'm on it. I'll warn Billings." "That's not going to be enough. Billings is like a damn petulant child. He'll probably ignore you, if he even answers his phone. Best I can do. I never trusted these back-channel diplomacy things, so I convinced the president to at least send a case officer with him. He should be able to do something even if Billings won't." Carly's words about a meeting came back. Jesus, she's the case officer, I thought. "Sir, that case officer I was telling you about in the park, Guy's friend from Decoy's past, she's the one on it. She told me, but I didn't put it together before. I was going to use her to pull in Guy, but she told me she was committed with the sex state. It has to be this meeting." "You got her number?" "That would cut through some red tape." Yeah, I got it. "I'll call her on the move. We need to get Billings to stay in the park until we can get there." "I'll do what I can, but like you said, he doesn't really listen to me. Call me secure from the road." I glanced back, making sure the room was empty, then returned to the screen. About to disconnect, Kurt saw the change in my demeanor and said, "What?" "Sir, I saw what Guy has become. He's got the skill and he's got the desire. He's going to kill his target, and there's nothing on earth we can do about it." "I don't need to hear that shit. You were like him and you came back." I squeezed my eyes shut and said, I know. That's exactly what I mean." I looked at the screen, my boss uncertain where I was coming from. Kurt not wanting to believe, but the tendrils of the beast inside me knew it like an absolute truth. I said, Someone's going to die today, and nothing you or I do will alter that.
Chapter 67. Guy watched the three men from the vehicle walk up the stairs to the museum, losing them from sight as they passed behind a thatch of landscaping at an outdoor cafe. He waited an additional 10 minutes, then slipped out of his car. He hugged the stone wall, walking in front of the vehicles parked nose end to the museum lot, using the granite as cover to stay out of sight of anyone coming down the stairs. He glanced around as he moved, casually surveying his surroundings. He saw packs of families taking the walkway from the museum to the ruins proper, but no one in the lot. He reached the front of the Audi and slipped his hand into his pocket. He pressed the key, seeing the locks pop up. His casual demeanor shifted as he rounded the car. He ducked low, moving swiftly, scuttling like a crab. He opened the door, sliding into the seat, his head below the dash, staring at the indicator above the console. He saw the passenger airbag off light flick out. Sensor working. He slid into the footwell, wanting to spend no more than 3 seconds arming his system. He rotated his head to the left and slid his hand under the seat, feeling for the loose lead. He found it and threaded it into the plastic slip lock, snapping it closed and completing the circuit. He pressed the button on the capacitor and saw a light flash green. The trap was set. He rolled upright and caught movement in the side mirror. A two-car convoy pulled up behind his vehicle and stopped. He slid back into the footwell, cramped with the door barely open, carefully avoiding the seat and its pressure sensor. The cars remained still. He crawled across the center console, as if he was playing a game of Twister, pulling the passenger door closed behind him. He slid into the driver's seat, focusing on the mirror. A small entourage arrived from the steps of the museum, walking to the vehicle. 4 men spilled out, wearing black suits and sunglasses. Protection? What the hell? A man with a sizable gut and a thick double chin exited, and Guy recognized him. Secretary Billings? Here? Right now? He couldn't believe his luck. What on earth had the gods put in his coffee to cause him to attempt a trap at the exact moment the U.S. Secretary of State paid an official visit to the Delphi ruins? He slid lower in the seat, positive that he wouldn't be recognized by Billings, but also knowing the personal security detail would be watching every single twig blown by a breeze. No way could he exit now. Then his world shrank even further. While Billings was glad-handing the museum people, another person exited. A woman. Guy focused on her and felt an electric jolt. Carly? From his hunched-over position, he couldn't be sure. He slid his hands up to the controls for the mirror and began manipulating, trying to confirm. It was her, and she would most definitely recognize him. What the fuck is she doing here? He crouched down, waiting on the PSD to move, feeling the seconds tick by, wondering if his targets would return to the car and find him in it. It was the most excruciating 2 minutes of his life. Eventually, the entourage walked away, the Greeks looking like a school of fish circling a sinking piece of bread. All of the members fawning over the Secretary of State, he in the middle, and Carly off to the right flank. They went up the steps to the museum, and the two-car convoy looped around, parking about 50 meters away in a roped-off section Guy had missed before. He slid out of the target vehicle and locked it, walking toward his own car as if he belonged, opening the door and taking his seat. He watched the entourage disappear and wondered what was going on. Chapter 68. Carly walked up the slabs of stone in the path that wound across the mountain, climbing steadily higher, looping back and forth, the switchbacks seemingly endless, the stadium on top their ultimate goal. She was invigorated by the ruins, having had little time to sightsee since she'd come aboard with the Greek station, spending most of her days in the seedy underbelly of Athens. The view to the south was incredible, the mountains falling away and looking remarkably like the Blue Ridge chain on the Appalachian Trail, with even some low fog to complete the image. The problems with Guy and her ongoing work had initially caused aggravation at being tasked to set up a professional meeting for Billings. But now she was glad for the mission, enjoying her short day trip. She couldn't say the same thing about her charge. Billings was huffing like a bull in a matador contest, putting his hands on his knees at every step and pressing down as if his arms could help his legs continue. The security detail and his personal assistant walking robotically around him. She said, "You want to take a break, sir?" Sweat rolling down his jowls, Billings just glared at her, saving his breath for the climb. They paused at four separate points, letting the chosen tour guide spout a monologue on the various relics and structures scattered about, and giving the secretary a brief respite. Eventually, they rounded the bend leading to the stadium at the top, the crumbling structure running over 100 meters, amazing Carly at the ability of ancient man to construct it on top of a mountain, all for Panhellenic foot races lost to history. The tour guide started her spiel, and Carly faded to the back, outside the ring of security, watching. She saw her contact standing next to a placard describing the grounds at the head of the stadium 50 meters away. A man named Haider al-Attiya, dressed exactly like the men in Billings' security detail. When she'd initially been tasked the responsibility for setting up the meeting, she had analyzed it using standard operational procedures for a personal source meet and found one glaring problem: the overt movements of the Secretary of State. She'd debriefed Billings, keeping her thoughts to herself on his amateur attempts to slip his security earlier, endangering not only himself but the source as well. She'd gone over his itinerary and designed a plan to incorporate the source meet under the noses of the ubiquitous Greek government officials greeting him at every turn. A way for them to ensure the final meet location was hidden, yet still blended with Secretary Billings's schedule. She broke from the pack, moving toward Haider, and felt her phone vibrate. She glanced at the screen, recognizing the number for Pike Logan, and shunted it to voicemail. Now was not the time to discuss anything about Guy. Having waited more than an hour, Guy was growing impatient. Whatever the Arabs were doing, it was taking forever, and the Secretary of State's arrival was complicating his plan. After successfully returning to his car, he'd kept a wary eye on the two drivers of the convoy, but both simply leaned against their car doors behind the ropes 50 meters away, clearly bored. They were far enough out that his improvised explosive device would cause no harm. But he was worried nonetheless. With his luck, they'd pull the convoy up behind the Audi, and the Secretary of State would walk by the passenger door the moment Haider sat down. He was feeling the lack of sleep, knowing his judgment was slipping and urgently wanting to get to the end game. Kill the targets and let him rest for a week. He thought about the key in his hotel room, the one for the safe deposit box, the one that would allow further exploitation of the operational cell from Cotter. And it was a cell, of that he was sure. He knew his actions would short-circuit their immediate plans, but there was probably a trove of threads inside that box waiting to be pulled. He couldn't do it alone, though. After this, he'd give himself up, hand over the key and take the punishment, hoping that the exploitation by the task force would vindicate him. Even if it didn't, he had no energy to continue. No fire left after the mission today. He wanted back into the land of the good, even if it meant living behind bars. He began to run through his head how he'd get in touch with Pike, and the actions he'd take to turn himself in. Maybe he could go through Carly. Surely she could work a contact through the station. Maybe get her to send a back-channel message to the director himself. He was on the Oversight Council, and from what Pike had said, they were all in a panic about his actions. His phone vibrated in his pocket, startling him. He pulled it out and saw it was Carly. What the hell? Chapter 69. Carly walked over to Hyder, pretending to look at the placard. Even though she recognized him, she continued with her bona fides to give him confidence. "They have this placard in every language but Arabic," he replied. "No matter. I speak English." She stuck out her hand and said, "I'm Carly. I'll be handling the meeting." He shook it and said, "I don't know why we're doing all of this, as you would say, cloak and dagger. Just a protection. Listen, I don't have a lot of time. The guide will lead the group down here soon for the tour. After, when we start back down the mountain, you blend in with the security. Don't try to act like you know what you're doing. Just walk on the perimeter down to our vehicles. When the crowd breaks up, stay with us. You'll load into the secretary's car, and we'll drive to that quaint tourist town on the way back to Athens. You have a car and driver as instructed, yes?"
"Yes."
"Have them follow. We'll stop in the town for lunch. You can talk to the secretary, and when we leave, you stay behind. Is that clear?"
"Yes, it's clear."
Carly smiled and said, "Sounds complicated, but it's just a precaution. Here they come." The group approached, Hyder and Carly relinquishing their position next to the placard and fading to the back. The tour guide began talking again, with Secretary Billings theatrically raising his eyebrows her way. She nodded slightly, exasperated in him, wanting to say, "You do realize everyone's looking at you, right?" Eventually, the guide wound down. The tour was over, and they began the march back to the bottom, moving more swiftly now that it was downhill and there were no more programmed stops. Guy stared at the screen of his phone. "She must have seen me." He considered not answering, but knew if she were calling, it was to keep him in the shadows. She could have just walked right up to him if she wanted, and still might. He answered, confused again, when a man's voice came on.
"Guy, is that you?"
"Who's this?"
"It's Pike, Pike Logan."
The words sent him spinning, trying to find an anchor as to what was happening. How did he have Carly's phone? Before he could speak, Pike said,
"Sorry for the subterfuge. I had to make sure you'd answer. I had the office spoof the number."
Office, meaning task force. Pike speaking around the issue on an open line.
"Look, I know you're on the hunt, and I know where you are. I'm about 10 minutes out, and I need you to back off."
Guy looked at his watch, factoring the time. He said,
"I told you on the ferry. I can't do that. I'm almost complete here." "Guy, the office has agreed to let us explore. The man you're trying to buy is not a final yet. Do you hear me? Get back on the team. If it pans out, it pans out. But we don't decide that. We bring the evidence and the office decides."
So they gave Pike alpha authority. The words held a weight. Pike telling him in code that he wanted Guy to join him in the exploration of evidence, but that it wasn't up to them to decide on taking out a target. It was up to the Oversight Council, the ones who had refused before.
What if this was nothing but a ploy? He wanted to believe, desperately wanted to cross back over. But his brother was still in the balance. He said, Pike, I hear you. I'm willing to talk. There's a key in my hotel room to a safe deposit box in Athens. I did the research and located it. But I can't get in by myself. It's the future of this thread. The past is the past. He heard relief in Pike's voice. So you're standing down? No, I'm sorry. That man is part of the past. Guy saw the entourage of the U.S. Secretary of State, the personal security detail, and the gaggle of Greek authorities all coming down the stairs. He saw Carly in the back, walking next to a security man. Only it wasn't. What the hell? Pike's voice became dark. The man you're looking at is working with the office. You need to stand down now. So that's what's going on. Duplicitous bastards. Pike, I don't work for them anymore, and I can't believe you'd use a lie to get me to stop. That fucker is gone, just like my brother. Chapter 70. Carly hung in the back next to Hyder, watching Secretary Billings thank his hosts and receive a small token of appreciation. He shook a few more hands, then signaled for his vehicles. As they pulled around, he motioned for Carly to come to him. He said, Look, I want to talk to Mr. El Atia alone for a minute. You and my security will ride in the second car. Mildly aggravated, she said, Sir, that's not the plan. I'm here for a reason. He showed displeasure, saying, You're here to support me, period. I'm just talking about the ride to the restaurant. 20 minutes. She said, Sir, we can't all fit into the second car. There's not enough room. Billings waved Hyder over, saying, Go with his people. Someone needs to make sure they know where we're stopping anyway. Now alarmed at the breakdown of the plan, she said, Sir, that's not a good idea. With Hyder approaching, he hissed, Don't question me on what's good or not. I'm doing it. He pointed at his personal assistant chatting with a Greek. Would you prefer I sent Leslie with him to give you room? She doesn't know what we're doing. Hyder arrived, and she remained silent. Billings said, Where's your car? Carly here is going to make sure it knows where to meet us. Hyder pointed, and Carly saw a late-model Audi, two men standing by the trunk. Pike said, Don't do it, Guy. I'm not lying to you. I would never lie to you. Carly is working it with your man, but we do have permission. You're going to hurt her. Come back over and let's attack this together. Do it right. Guy stared at the group by the convoy, the Greeks moving back up the stairs and waving, the car doors opening. He said, I know Carly's here. I see her. The security man went to the second car, cramming in all five. The lead car had only Secretary Billings, Hyder, and Carly. He felt his breath increase, knowing he was within seconds of initiation. Go, end the meeting, get this over with. Secretary Billings held out his hand, and Hyder entered the car. Guy snapped upright, not believing what he was seeing. Shit. Carly began walking toward the Audi, looking back at the secretary's car. The convoy began moving, leaving the parking lot. No, 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 no! Pike was still shouting in the phone, but Guy was no longer listening. He watched Carly move at a slow pace, stopping at the back of the Audi, and talking to the two men there, his two targets. She shook their hands, then moved to the passenger door, snapping Guy out of his trance. He was almost 100 meters away, with no time to reach her. He cut into the diatribe on the phone, saying, Pike, forgive me, find the key, and started his car. Carly portrayed calm on the outside, but felt the anxiety she always did on a source meet, where she never really knew the motivations of the men she was courting. The driver appeared normal enough, but the other passenger, introduced as Khalid, was a bundle of energy with piercing eyes, like a bird of prey constantly scanning, constantly on the hunt. She said, "We'll be following about a minute behind. You remember that town about 15 kilometers back on Highway 48? We'll be stopping at a restaurant there." Khalid said, "Okay, you ride up front, show him the way." She moved to the passenger's door, keeping one eye on him. She opened it, then saw him turn. She focused on his line of sight and saw a small Fiat screaming across the parking lot. She was about to sit down when she recognized the man behind the wheel. Guy George. There could be only one reason he was coming. Targets. She screamed, "Get in the car! Get in the car!" His door half open. Khalid whirled around, facing the vehicle. The other Arab jumped up on the curb, moving toward the stairs. Carly slid into the seat, slamming the door. Guy exploded from the car, disregarding the Arabs and running right at her, shouting at her to get out. His eyes were bloodshot and wild, and she realized Pike was right. He'd crossed over. She locked the door. Khalid jumped on Guy's back as he came by, but he ignored the attack, staggering forward. Guy bashed the window with his elbow, spraying Carly with glass. She raised her arms and Guy ripped at the door lock, screaming, "Get the fuck out of the car, it's going to blow!" Khalid wrapped his arms around Guy's neck and Guy whirled backward, slamming Khalid into the body of the Audi and causing him to drop. His words sank in. Carly frantically fought the door handle, managing to get it to pop open. Guy kicked the edge, swinging it wide, grabbing her by the hair and shirt and jerking her forcefully out, flinging her body to the ground. Khalid stood up, arms raised, snarling, but Guy ignored him, instead jumping onto the passenger seat until his body covered it. Khalid charged, and the seat exploded in a blinding flash, throwing Khalid backward. Carly covered her head, pieces of glass and bits of metal raining around her. She heard nothing but ringing in her ears. She rolled over and saw Guy slide out of the car, his body black and red. He hit the pavement, and she saw his arm rise up. He was alive. She crawled to him, surveying the carnage, not knowing where to even begin because of his massive wounds. Blood was everywhere. His jaw was askew, white bone lancing out of red flesh. His abdomen was ripped open, internal organs spilling out onto the pavement. He grabbed her hand, his eyes fluttering. Seconds later, she saw his soul flee his body. Chapter 71. The mood inside the Oval Office was somber and hushed, without the usual back-and-forth talking among the Principals Committee of the Oversight Council. All waited on Colonel Kurt Hale to continue. He clicked a slide showing the Audi twisted open like a tuna can. "Sergeant Major Guy George died of his wounds. Pike arrived shortly after the explosion and provided immediate damage control. Due to the sensitive and urgent nature of the discussions between Haider al-Attiyah and Secretary Billings, I had briefed Pike on the current meeting with Secretary Billings and deployed him immediately to do what he could. He knew about CIA case officer involvement, and he evacuated Carly Ramirez for cover purposes. Kerry Bostwick, the director of the CIA, said, I appreciate that. Her being there would only have complicated things with the authorities. Alexander Palmer said, Other injuries? Was Sergeant Major George the only one hit? Hyder's friend, a man introduced as Khalid, apparently received a slight cut to his forehead. but he and the other man fled the scene, refusing treatment. President Warren said, "And our exposure?" Kurt knew that question was coming and had spent the majority of the last 24 hours mitigating disaster. "So far, we are okay, but it's tenuous. The press is calling it an attack against the United States Secretary of State, since he'd left there seconds before. The problem is that the IED was embedded in an Audi rented by Haider al-Attiyah." "So he's going to be linked, charged with this?"
"Not with some luck. I had the task force computer network operations cell manipulate the rental data for that car. Basically erase it. And we did it messily, so they'd know it was hacked, trying to make it look like it was pre-planned. The strike wasn't a suicide attack, so we hope it'll look like someone covering his tracks. The rental agency is a high-end one, not like a Hertz. You arrange your car and it's delivered to you. This vehicle was delivered to the Athenaeum Hotel as a two-package deal for two different customers, with both given to the valet. There is a risk that someone in the chain will remember who that car was for, but Haider al-Attiyah was never physically seen or contacted, and there are now no physical or virtual records. The only man the valet saw was the driver that Carly met after the car was delivered. It's not perfect, but there's enough smoke to diffuse things."
President Warren said, "That does sound a bit tenuous.
Best we can do. But we expect the Greeks will have a preconceived notion of where to look for villains, and it'll probably be along local lines. It won't be with the Qatar Investment Authority if they want to keep the money flowing. There are a couple of loose points, though."
"What?"
Kurt said, "Carly, for one. She's not a risk, but I took the liberty to have Pike read her onto the program. She's made a bunch of leaps in her head, I'm sure, and most probably aren't correct. She's damn near become a member of the task force anyway, with her help. And honestly, she's pretty good at what she does." In a small bit of humor, Kerry said, "Always cherry-picking my talent. I can see where this is going." Kurt said, "Just trying to plug the holes."
Kerry looked at President Warren.
"Sir?"
"Yeah, that's fine. Read her on, but also have her sign the usual non-disclosures."
"The read-on's complete. The non-disclosures will have to wait. Pike doesn't travel with them."
The president waved his hand, indicating that was minutia. "What else?"
"Haider al-Attiyah and his cohorts. They need to be told to shut the hell up and get out of the country. I'm assuming Billings has control of them, correct?"
Palmer said, "Yeah, he didn't even realize the attack had occurred until way later. His meeting went according to plan. Haider's agreed to go to Oslo and has the timeline. There were some issues with visas, but Billings says he can handle it."
Kurt said, "Okay, then. Let him press about how he's going out on a limb to protect them, then put a gag on them. Cover their tracks and get them out of Greece. I don't care what they think they know. Billings needs to shut them down." He paused for effect, then said, "Unless you want to throw Haider and his guys to the wolves, that would save me some alpha mission work with Pike. We could let the Greek authorities tear those assholes apart. They'll find the terrorist connections and use Guy George's attack to hang him as an assault against the Secretary of State. But I doubt Billings will go along with that."
Palmer said, "You still think they've got something to do with Guy's brother's death? After how crazy Guy acted?"
"I can't prove anything at this stage, but yes, I actually think it's more than that. What I know is that a man who was one of the most highly trained terrorist hunters on the planet believed it, even if he went rogue to prove it. And besides that new driver, all of those assholes are on a target package from Afghanistan."
Palmer said, "Well, we'll go with your first option.
We can't have them talking about rogue American super ninjas trying to kill them under a Greek interrogation. Kurt said, Why would they talk about that? They have no idea. I mean, Billings never said anything about Guy to his friends, right? President Warren raised his hand and said, We're not going to revisit that. I talked to Billings, and he denied telling Hyder anything. That's enough for me. And that means it's enough for you. Understood? Kurt bit back a retort, only saying, Yes, sir. Alexander Palmer said, And we need to discuss the Alpha Authority Pike was given. With Guy George dead, there's no reason to continue pursuing it. Kurt said, What are you talking about? Nothing's changed with Hyder al-Attiyah. Yeah, Billings can run his little ego boost in Oslo. But our exploration is based on evidence of future planning, not on bringing in Guy George. He went from face to face and felt a sickening realization. He said, Right? He looked at the president and said, Right, sir? You didn't give me Alpha as a ploy, did you? Tell me you didn't make me lie to Pike. President Warren said, No, of course not. But all operations are predicated on the environment. We're going to need to evaluate the current atmosphere within Greece and perhaps revisit Alpha at a later date. Those Arabs are not an imminent threat worth forcing potential compromise. We've done enough in Greece.
Sir, that's not true. Pike has nothing at all to do with any of this. He's not involved in the attack or any of Billings' meetings. He's not tied into anything and not a risk or compromise.
Kurt, enough. We'll make a decision at the Oversight Council meeting in 2 days. I'm not going to use this forum for something that should be an Oversight Council discussion. Kurt remained quiet, understanding the intent, but not wanting it voiced out loud, saving himself an out. President Warren continued, But speaking of Guy, where do we stand with him?
Innocent bystander caught in the blast, nothing more. We're getting him home using the alias he had in Greece. Turned out to be a Ranger Battalion buddy that died in Iraq. When he gets here, we'll switch him back. His parents will learn of the death as a training accident.
President Warren said, How many other siblings did he have?
None. Both sons are dead.
President Warren looked at the Secretary of Defense and said, I want something done for the family from you, something personal. They've lost 2 sons in the span of a month. We can't tell them about Guy's contributions, but I want his death to mean something. Kurt Hale appreciated the sentiment, but not in the way President Warren intended.
Guy's death will most definitely mean something.
Chapter 72. I closed the laptop lid and said, So now you know who we are, what we do. Carly said nothing, glancing at Jennifer, then at me. I said, You'll have to sign some non-disclosure statements for the bean counters, but I don't have them here. She finally spoke. I've done some classified activities in my time, but this is beyond belief. I'm sorry I agreed to be read on. I don't want to know about this. I laughed and said, Too late for that. She said, Pike, this is illegal. Signing a non-disclosure or building a snazzy briefing makes it look official, like any other covert action, but it's not. She looked at Jennifer and said, Is this what you knew before you agreed to join? Jennifer said, No, not really. Pike sort of tricked me into joining based on our cover organization. I'd get to do scientific research, and occasionally my company would be used to enhance United States security. I joined for him, but I stayed for the mission. I said, Oh, bullshit. She pretends to be above it all, but you saw her in the park. She loves this shit. Yes, it's illegal, but we control the outcome. It's kept small, and we only hire the best. Carly's face clouded over, and she said, You mean like Guy? I said yes, like Guy. A cycle of darkness was now between us and the death of Guy George. The aftermath had been brutal, because we had failed. There was something that would hang over my head until I laid it down for the final time. Driving in our rental van, all of us kitted out for a hostile takedown like we were going against an imminent threat. We had planned on the move. Nobody wanted to escalate into lethal force, and we'd loaded down with non-lethal options. Guy had stated he'd start shooting the minute he saw us, but I didn't think that would be the case. At least I hoped it wouldn't be. After failing to get Carly to answer her phone, I'd decided to mitigate the risk by reaching out to Guy directly. I'd had the task force spoof Carly's number, and was talking to him on the phone when we rounded the final mountain bend to Delphi. I could see the parking spots about a mile ahead, the thin road threading the side of a ridge line and bulging out in front of the archaeological site. During the conversation, I was growing confident that Guy would stand down. I could hear it in his voice. Then the discussion went south, his final words chilling. We were close enough to see the explosion, and arrived within a minute of it going off, the staff of the museum and random tourists just starting to react. We pulled up in a rush. The man I'd fought in the park passing by, running the other way and looking back, a cut over his left eye bleeding freely. We leapt out, but there was nothing to be done. Carly was cradling Guy's body, and he was destroyed. Carly was covered in blood, and I wasn't sure if it was hers or Guy's. The place turned into chaos, like an anthill kicked over, with people screaming and running back and forth. Without words, the team deployed into a security perimeter, and Brett, our designated medic, ran to the side of the car. He took one look at Guy and turned to Carly, breaking her away. He found her to be physically okay, and we loaded her into the van. Knuckles had the presence of mind to scoop up a pistol lying on the ground next to Guy's body, but that was all we could recover. We drove off, masked by the confusion, leaving Guy's body behind. I'd called the task force immediately, giving them a sit rep and passing the pictures of the vehicle Guy had destroyed. I'd then debriefed Carly on the drive back, learning that Guy had sacrificed himself to save her. In the end, I'd been right. Someone was going to die at Guy's hands, and there hadn't been a damn thing I could do to stop it. Kurt had called back within 5 minutes, and I walked him through everything I knew. The conversation was short and clinical, like describing a failed science experiment instead of the death of someone we both considered family. It ended with him telling me to sterilize Guy's hotel room and to read on Carly, getting her under control. Using Guy's historical trace, I'd ordered Knuckles and Nick to track down his hotel room, sterilize it, then maintain eyes on for a night to see who else showed up. I decided reading on Carly to our operations could wait. She had been through a significant event, and her mental state took priority. I'd let her call into work, going secure on her phone and telling her boss what had occurred. When she'd hung up, she told me Secretary Billings was fine, and that the two men from the museum had somehow linked up with him. Her voice sounded like it was business as usual, but her eyes were hollow. I refused to let her leave. We'd spent the night talking, just letting her get her feelings out. Brett surreptitiously monitored her, with Jennifer and I providing a sounding board. At one point, she demanded to know what we were about. I'd told her to wait, that it wasn't worth the effort now. All we needed to discuss was Guy and Decoy. Eventually, Brett had given her a sedative, and I'd given her my bed. I sent Jennifer to Nick's room, but I slept on the couch. In the morning, she seemed much more herself, stating she had to get back to work. Reports to write, people to talk to. And I knew I couldn't stop her with just my incredible persona. But I had a briefing that might. And boy, did it ever. She stared at my laptop screen and said, "Who else knows about the task force?" "That's a little tricky. We have plenty of shell companies and cover organizations, doctors, boat drivers, pilots, that sort of thing. But very few are read on to the whole program. They know they're doing something classified for the government, but they're either working under a cover within a cover, or are just doing it blindly because it's helping out national security. I saw her face and said, "Don't look like you're shocked. You do the same damn thing. The Oversight Council, of course, knows all, as do the operators. And now you." She said, "Why are you telling me this? I really don't want to know. This thing is a gross violation of everything I've ever learned. It's exactly what we laugh about when we hear the conspiracies about the CIA. Do you know how many congressional committees I've had to testify in front of on things that were benign? This would cause a complete meltdown, the destruction of the presidential administration." "Yeah, I know, believe me, I know. That's why Guy going rogue was so important. But why me, if nobody else knows about it? Because of your position and your support on past operations. You had to know we were something different when you saw Decoy and Knuckles in action in Peru. We've run on a few others that have been involved in operations unwittingly." I paused, then smiled. "But only if Kurt wants to recruit them." Carly shook her head, saying, "Don't tell me a read-on means recruitment. No way. Decoy's dead and now Guy." She looked me in the eye and said, "You talk about this organization as if it's ironclad do-gooders, but Guy almost killed me, because he was on a vendetta." Jennifer spoke up, "Hey, wait a minute. I wouldn't be here if I thought this organization was evil. Like you, I had my doubts, but you have no right to judge. Guy was wrong, no doubt, and I wanted to bring him in, but he was on to something." "What do you mean?" I said, "We've been given authority to explore the relationships of those three assholes doing business with Secretary Billings. Guy was convinced they were involved in his brother's death in Afghanistan, and when we were hunting them, he found what he said was evidence of further terrorist activity." "Then why is Secretary Billings dealing with them? You just told me he was a member of the Oversight Council. Don't tell me you're rogue as well." "No, Billings knows what we're doing. Why that jerk-off is continuing is beyond me. He's always had his head up his ass, convinced he knows more than anyone else." She squinted her eyes, not liking me disparaging a cabinet official. She clearly hadn't had to deal with him in an official capacity. I backed off, saying, "Okay, okay. He's using them to help stabilize the Greek economy and apparently thinks they'll help with some peace overtures in Afghanistan. He thinks he's Henry Kissinger dealing with Black September in Lebanon at the same time they're blowing up Israelis. Nobody believes they're an imminent threat, but the bottom line is we still have alpha authority." She had another question, but before she could broach it, the door to our room opened. Chapter 73. Knuckles barged in, about to blurt something out, then saw Carly. Nick said nothing, shifting from foot to foot, still the new guy. Exasperated, I said, "And?" Knuckles said, "And we're clean. We policed up some electrical components and some other odds and ends, including a box of Russian ammo. So I guess that nails down who owns the 6P9. We left his clothes and other travel stuff, only taking anything compromising. Anyone show?" "Yeah, it took a while. But they've obviously identified the body. Some beat cops came in, then a guy that looked like he was from the U.S. Embassy. Nothing spiked. Looked like a standard investigation, so we let him go." "That's fine. Did you find anything of value?" Knuckles glanced at Carly again, and I said, "She was just read on. You're not hiding anything anymore." He grinned and said, "Good, because I was about to blow a gasket without being able to say anything. We got the safe deposit key, and Guy's research to track it down. We know the bank, and we've got all of his digital photos he's taken. He was right. Those fucksticks are into some bad shit. I don't know what, but he wasn't kidding about that new man." He nodded at Carly, saying, "The one you said was driving? Guy's got photos of him getting a ton of cash and new identification on the island of Crete. How much do you know about him?" She started to answer, and my phone rang with the peculiar ringtone telling me it was a secure call. The rest of the team heard it and knew what it was as well. They looked at me like a pack of hounds tracking a guy waving bacon. I answered, then mouthed, "Kurt." "Hey, sir. I was just about to send you a report. Knuckles just got back. Let's have it. First, looks like guy's alias is holding up. Knuckles watched the room overnight, and it's not spiked with anyone other than local forces." "Well, that's good news. From our end, keeping him as a tragic victim is shaky. Nothing bad seen from this end. You do your magic and we should be good. Carly's read onto the program and good to go. She's headed back to work to answer any further questions. But from her end, Secretary Billings' meeting with Haider al-Attiyah was kept out of the attack. His two friends managed to escape without getting rolled up." Kurt said, "Yeah, I know. I just got out of a briefing with the principals. Billings is headed to Oslo, Norway, and he's taking all three of those guys with him." "You're shitting me." "Nope. He's even managed to convince the president to let him put pressure on Norway's ambassador to give Haider's driver a visa for Oslo. Apparently that guy's Haider's go-to man for Afghanistan." "Sir, that's the second thing I wanted to talk to you about. We've sterilized guy's hotel room, and we have digital proof that that driver got his documentation in Crete days ago. He's not some genius on Afghanistan politics. Pike, anything that guy came up with is not going to sway Billings. The man was running crazy." "Well, tell him to buckle the fuck up then, because I've got a key to a safe deposit box, and what's inside isn't going to be good news for his friends. Pike, I need you to start looking at exfil options. Prepare to come home." I said nothing for a second, not sure I'd heard correctly. "What? We're on an operational mission here. Yeah, guy's dead, but we got Alpha before that. And it's because guy's dead that I'm continuing. He saved Carly's life. Did you know that? In the end, he had a pretty fucking good trap and Secretary Billings screwed it up. Guy gave his life to fix what he'd done wrong. He's going to go down in history as evil, but he's on to evidence about those guys and I'm rooting that shit out." "I hear you. Pike, they're going to pull Alpha Authority. Shit, they've actually already done so. I just chose not to hear it." "What's that mean?" "President Warren said they wanted to revisit the Alpha Authority at the next Oversight Council meeting. He meant he wanted me to stop all activities, then put it back up to a vote to reauthorize it, if they agreed, which they won't." I saw where he was going, giving me an out. "But he didn't say that, did he? He didn't say that he was rescinding Alpha until the vote, did he?" I heard nothing but breathing, and I knew my friend Colonel Kurt Hale was about to step into Pike land. I said, "Sir?" "No, he didn't say that explicitly." "So we have until the Oversight Council meeting before they can rescind it, right?" "Nothing." "Right, sir?" "Yes, I guess that's right." I broke into a smile. "When's the meeting?" 2 days. "You don't have anything in 2 days and you're done." "Oh, I'll have something. Don't think I can't read between the lines here. Those fucks gave you Alpha just to bring in Guy. They played with task force loyalty to get what they wanted. Pike, that's not true. They're just making decisions based on the information they have. There's a lot at stake here with Greece and Afghanistan." "Oh, bullshit, sir. They're looking at the benefit of these guys like a neighborhood looking at the good the mafia does, conveniently forgetting the murders. Guy was right, and we still do what's right, don't we?" I saw Carly staring at me intently. I turned away. She might be read on, but she didn't need to hear the inside baseball of what life in the task force was really like. Kurt said, "Pike, you get me something in 2 days or we're done. Guy's sacrifice will mean nothing." I said, "Easy day, sir." "They can forget about his brother, but I'm not forgetting about Guy." I hung up and everyone looked at me, waiting. I said, "We have 2 days." Knuckles said, "2 days to do what?" "Rob a bank."
Chapter 74.
Khalid flipped through the Afghan passport, seeing nothing but the new visa for Norway. He said,
Sabur Jardin, a Pashtun name. What city?
Sipping tea and eating a fig, Sabur said,
I'm from Palmyra, Syria.
But we were given this name for the passport, specifically given this name.
Why?
Sabur smiled and said,
I don't know. I guess because we were going to Afghanistan. My first name is Sabur, but Jardin is made up, a tribal name.
Khalid laughed and said,
How on earth were you supposed to infiltrate anything in Afghanistan?
Sabur set his tea down, a movement made delicate by his long fingers. Khalid thought everything he did was delicate, like a bird. He was slight, with a sad smile perpetually on his face, and so far had not questioned a single thing, as if he had completely given his fate over to others, a fact that intrigued Khalid. Sabur said,
I was the only one in our camp that had ever been to Afghanistan. I spent a year in Gardez.
And now you're with us in Oslo instead. Do you have any doubts? The sad smile slipped out again.
No, Allah has chosen me for a great mission. I go where He tells me to go.
Khalid laughed again and said, You believe Allah is speaking through Haider and his father?
Yes. Do you not?
When Khalid didn't answer, Sabur said,
Why are you here, if not for the caliphate?
The question was confusing, precisely because Khalid had never really given it any thought. In the end, simple anger drove him forward. He was not seeking anything more than to prove his own self-worth. He wanted to be like Sharif, a self-made man, and so he continued leveraging Haider for a lost cause of tribal affiliation. He was Muslim, of course, but other than its providing an outlet for his hatred of the West, he'd never really given Islam or the Caliphate much reflection. Khalid said,
I do what I do for my own reasons. I'm curious about you, though. You know what you're here for, right?
He didn't say it out loud, as if the fact that Sabur's success involved giving his life was somehow not to be verbalized.
Yes, of course.
And you have no qualms, no fear. The smile appeared and left like a shadow.
Of course not. All I am doing is moving on to something greater. I'm leaving this mortal land for paradise. Most must endure a lifetime before entry, but I will be granted access by virtue of my sacrifice.
Khalid nodded as if he understood, but he didn't. Haider's phone rang, and Khalid picked it up, seeing the country code for Qatar. He knew who it was, and expected the usual excoriation from Sharif. He was pleasantly surprised.
Where is my son?
Sir, he's with the Secretary of State. They're talking about the peace meetings.
Good, good. You are the one I wanted to talk with anyway. You had no trouble getting into Oslo with the Shahid?
The statement confused Khalid, but he didn't let it show in his voice.
No, Secretary Billings took care of his entry just as you said would happen. And Haider knows the meeting location?
Not yet, he's finding out now. Sir, what did you mean you wanted to talk to me?
Write this down.
Khalid grabbed a pen, and Sharif relayed an address in the Grinland section of Oslo. He had Khalid repeat it, then said,
That is an automobile shop in the city near the Islamic Cultural Center. The men there will give you the keys to a Range Rover. You will bring it back to the Shahid.
Yes, sir. Do I pay them?
No, they have been well compensated, but you will go alone.
Khalid's instincts kicked in at the words. Sharif had shown him only scorn in the past. So if he wanted Khalid to go alone, there was a reason. And it probably involved protecting his son. He said,
I'll need the Shahid to learn. I'll take him with me. You can teach him when you get back. You go alone. There will be a man named Abdul Haq, and he'll also provide you weapons for emergencies. I want you to use them on him.
Khalid said nothing. Sharif said,
Khalid, can you do this?
Why?
He is a link, a weakness. I want him removed to protect the mission.
Khalid didn't respond. Sharif continued.
Khalid, you have shown a willingness to do what's necessary and an intelligence to get it done. You killed in Afghanistan, correct? That's what Haider tells me.
Yes, I did.
The Americans? You killed the one they captured?
Yes.
And you survived the attack in Greece without panicking. Haider said the Shahid was a bundle of nerves afterward, but you were in control. Is this true?
I guess.
Khalid, Haider does not have it in him. If I send him, he will fail. You do this, and you will become my second son.
Khalid could not believe the words, the promise it held. He said,
Are you toying with me?
No.
I mean what I say.
Okay, sir. It will be done. Sharif disconnected, and Khalid set the phone on the table, lost in thought. The door to the room opened, and Haider entered. The first words out of his mouth were,
Sabur, never, ever speak to the secretary again. He's starting to question.
Sabur nodded, and Khalid said, From the plane?
Yes, from the plane flight.
After takeoff, the first thing Secretary Billings had done was question the attack at Delphi, play-acting as if he had no idea why it had occurred, and ensuring they knew that the United States had protected them by eliminating their connection to the Audi. No mention was made of the man who died. Secretary Billings, acting as if he were the innocent bystander proclaimed by the press. Khalid had thought it was ludicrous, as both of them knew it was the work of the United States. But for whatever reason, Secretary Billings preferred to pretend. As long as he kept facilitating their mission, Khalid would let it go, especially since the man who'd been hunting them was now dead. Eventually, the talk turned to the meetings. And Secretary Billings had given Sabur a greeting in Pashto. When Sabur had simply looked at him, Billings had asked where he was from, in English. Haider had translated into Arabic, and puzzled, Billings had asked why he was using that language instead of Pashto. Thinking fast, Haider had said he didn't speak Pashto, and Sabur didn't speak English, so they would use Arabic to talk. Billings had taken that in, and then asked questions about the Taliban sects and the fractures after the death of Mullah Omar. Haider had pretended to hold a conversation with Sabur, then gave out general platitudes. Not satisfied with the answers, Billings had probed deeper. Eventually, when the answers remained shallow, Billings had quit asking, looking as if he were doubting Sabur's expertise. Khalid had redirected the conversation to the attack at Delphi, and Secretary Billings became recalcitrant, no longer eager to talk. They flew the rest of the way in silence. Khalid said,
Is it going to be an issue?
Haider waved his hand and took a seat, looking out at the Oslo cityscape.
No, he just thinks I'm stupid for bringing Sabur. He doesn't suspect us of anything.
Where are the talks, here in the city?
No, they're in the old town of Fredrikstad, about an hour and a half away. He's got some work here in Oslo tomorrow. Then we'll travel down the day after tomorrow. He asked if we wanted to go with him in his vehicles.
And what did you say?
What do you think? I said we had our own vehicle arranged by the QIA. Any word on that from my father?
Yes, I pick up the car tomorrow. By myself.
This ends Disc 9.